Welcome to this episode in the Sabbatical 101 live coaching series, where I bring you behind the scenes of a real sabbatical strategy session with academics from across disciplines. These live coaching sessions give you insight into the questions and worries fellow academics have about their sabbaticals and the practical strategies and mindset shifts that go into planning a life-changing sabbatical. Whether you're dreaming of your first sabbatical or you're in the midst of planning one, I hope these candid conversations will help normalize concerns and challenges around sabbatical planning, provide you with some practical ways forward, and help you get inspired to make the most of your sabbatical. Today, I'm talking to Jamie Lawler about her spring 2026 sabbatical. Jamie is an associate professor at Eastern Michigan University. She's a clinical and developmental psychologist with expertise in early life stress, self-regulation, and mental health interventions for children. Her research program is grounded in developmental psychopathology and focuses on the impact of early life stress on the socio-emotional development of children and on interventions to promote resilience. Jamie's primary challenge in planning her sabbatical was that she had originally planned to go to Greece on a Fulbright, but then her family situation changed and she realized it might no longer work out. So our conversation was about starting back at square one with sabbatical planning. We discussed Jamie's work-related goals for her sabbatical, her goal of really stepping away from her university during sabbatical, and how leaning into hobbies and new daily rhythms might help her sabbatical at home feel like a true break. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Jamie. Thanks so much for doing this live coaching session with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I'm really excited to hear more about your upcoming sabbatical. But before we do that, would you mind just introducing yourself and telling our listeners a little bit about where you are, what you study?
Yeah, sure. So I am an associate professor at Eastern Michigan University in the psychology department, and I study the development of children's self-regulation or self-control, especially over the early years and for kids who have experienced adversity. And I also study interventions to promote self-regulation and kind of build resilience for kids.
Awesome. Such an important topic of study. And also, I feel like I need to have a whole separate side conversation with you about my kids who are 7 and 11 and still learning a lot about self-regulation.
Yes, I have my own two test subjects at home as well.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your family, because our sabbaticals are never just about us. We have people in our lives and ecosystems who are involved in and affected by our sabbaticals.
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband, Chris, and my two kids, I have a 4-year-old boy and a 7, almost 8-year-old girl.
Awesome. And so I know that you had an initial plan. Your sabbatical is starting in winter 2026. Mm-hmm. And so you had a plan mapped out. And part of the reason we're talking today is because it's not going as planned. So would you mind telling me a little bit more about that? And then we can think about different ways to adjust or pivot and reframe the sabbatical.
Yeah, sure. So I started planning the sabbatical actually like a couple of years ago, because I was eligible for a sabbatical 2 years ago, but decided to put it off because I was in the middle of a federally funded grant. And I figured trying to take sabbatical at that time wouldn't be very restful because I would be running my grant anyway. So I put it off a little bit, but started thinking that I would love to do sort of a quote unquote proper sabbatical and go somewhere with my family for the time. And so I started looking into some options and, you know, knew about the Fulbright program. So started learning more about it. And last summer started thinking about it more seriously and talking to people here at my university. And also I just reached out to people who had done Fulbrights in my area, because one of the things that was tripping me up early on was that the studies I usually run, my research takes years. So yeah, the idea that I could do a whole project in, one semester, I couldn't really wrap my head around what that would look like. But I went on Fulbright's website and they have like a directory of the past awards. So I just kind of searched around looking for anything that was like vaguely like the type of research that I do. And then I just like cold emailed those people and asked them if they'd be willing to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And several people were, you know, graciously willing to talk, which was great. So I started thinking about what I could do and making a plan. And then I was really open to going kind of anywhere. I just wanted to take my family on an adventure. Mm-hmm. Initially, I was like looking at Spanish-speaking countries because I thought it would be really nice to brush up on my Spanish and have my kids learn some Spanish. But most of the Fulbright awards in those countries require you to speak like fluent Spanish in order to do those awards, which isn't true of a lot of other countries. A lot of countries, the activities are done in English. So that plan didn't pan out, but I just started reaching out to different connections with people that I know in different places around the world and followed like a few different threads for a while and tried to decide which of them made sense to do. And eventually I was connected with folks at the Aristotle University of Thessaloniki, which is in Greece, and they are in the school psychology department there. And they were really excited about the idea of bringing one of my interventions that I've been working on here in the States to schools there in Thessaloniki. Mm-hmm. And so that was the plan. And I had three faculty members there who like wrote me a letter of invitation. And I worked hard on my application materials and submitted that in April. Was, you know, excited about it. And it found out in December that I was a semi-finalist for that. So it started becoming slightly more real. I thought it might pan out. But then in terms of challenges, this plan was going to work because my husband was in a job that it was fully remote and he was going to be able to just come and work from there. But he was laid off in February of this year and then has now secured a new job, but it is a hybrid position, so mixed remote and in person. So when he got that job, we started wondering whether it would even be possible to do the Fulbright, not to mention the current climate and federal funding freezes, which were making us nervous about the idea of doing a program that was federally funded when those funds are being frozen. And so we started questioning whether we would be able to do this a couple months ago. But then I just recently found out that I wasn't awarded the fellowship at all. So now we're back to square one. We don't have to make the decision on one hand. So I was disappointed, but also a little bit relieved to hear that I wasn't awarded the fellowship, but now trying to make a plan for what my sabbatical will look like going from here.
Yeah, like you said, you're back to square one. I think, you know, one good thing is that, and right now we're recording this in May and you still have a runway. It's not like your sabbatical starts in August and, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. The Fulbright timelines are really challenging because you could conceivably find out in April or May and then you're supposed to move somewhere in a couple months.
Yeah, that was actually why I applied for the winter semester award, was because I was like, we can't possibly do that. Like, how are we going to find schools for our kids? And all, like, it just didn't seem feasible.
So many logistics. Yeah. And I mean, I appreciate you walking through that whole process because I think it really, what a great example of just how you forge connections and figure out what's possible, you know. That's really exciting. Maybe there will be an opportunity to collaborate in the future if they're interested in using your intervention. But I guess that I wonder how much just that initial thinking about like, how do I go away and do something, just reshaped your thinking about what a sabbatical could be or what the work on sabbatical looks like. Because it sounds like a very different type of project you would have done in Greece than what you were initially envisioning.
Yeah, I went down different possible avenues for the project that I would do abroad. And the Fulbright that I ended up applying to was the research and teaching joint fellowship, because I learned through talking to people that teaching didn't have to be like classroom teaching, which is what I thought of when I thought of the teaching Fulbrights. So the project was going to be doing some efficacy and feasibility and acceptability research with the intervention, but the teaching was going to be actually teaching the graduate students there to deliver the intervention and doing some small seminars and lectures and those types of things to fulfill the teaching requirement.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And thanks for sharing that insight. Let's pivot and talk about your sabbatical now, which is going to be one semester at home, right? As you think about this upcoming sabbatical, what's your greatest desire for the time away?
Yeah, I would still like to do some sort of travel and some sort of adventure as part of it. We've started looking like briefly into a few other options for, like, you know, slightly longer than a normal vacation, but not a full semester. So we're thinking about that. And then I've also started thinking about what my pivoted research project will look like, since I have to do it something during my sabbatical, and kind of how I'd like to align it as best I can with what I was planning to do there. So my current thought is to work with some schools around here or in Detroit to try and implement the intervention in a school nearby. That's kind of the vague plan, but I haven't talked to any schools yet or kind of made any action plans.
Sure. Well, I mean, that makes sense given the timing, and you've just had a decision point where, you know, up until now, you were kind of like, will we go to Greece? Will we not? And so, like you said, for better or worse, the decision is made for you. So now there's this whole mindset shift to, okay, what do I want to do if I'm not changing my environment completely? Maybe the sabbatical is punctuated by some different trips or new experiences, but the whole thing won't primarily be in a different place. So as you think about those desires, and I understand that they're not fully formulated yet because you're still wrapping your head around the change. As you think about what you want to get out of your sabbatical, what do you see as the biggest challenge standing between you and that out?
Yeah, I'm not sure, I guess, because it's hard to picture exactly what it'll look like now that it's not going the direction I had been planning for quite a while. I mean, I think I am definitely going to try and step away as, like, fully as I can from the university, even though I'll be nearby. But I think it will be hard being close because I have lots of graduate students that I mentor, and a research lab that will still be going while I'm gone. And I could definitely see that it will be easy to get sucked back into things. So I think that will be one of the biggest challenges.
Yeah. And in terms of pivoting your project, is there a concrete goal where you're like, I absolutely must do X, Y, and Z during my sabbatical in terms of work productivity? Or do you feel more like sabbatical is going to be an interesting time to try out something different and let's see how it goes? Like, where do you kind of fall on the continuum of how urgently something needs to get done that you have a product to show for it during sabbatical?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd probably somewhere in between, but a little bit more towards the, we'll just like see how it all pans out. Sometimes in terms of my timeline, I will go up for full in 2 years. So I'll have a year after my sabbatical and then go up for full. But because I have like lots of different research projects that go on and lots of collaborations, my research productivity in terms of articles and whatnot, I feel pretty good about. I don't feel like I need to stress too much about that as part of my sabbatical. I'm wrapping up data collection on a NIH grant this summer. And so we'll have a ton of data to analyze and write up. So I imagine I'll do some of that on my sabbatical, but I don't feel like I need to pump out publications as part of it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a great place to be going into sabbatical, because then you can really lean into what you want to use the sabbatical for. And it's like, yeah, work will get done because you're a smart, motivated, successful person. So you're probably not just going to sit on the couch and watch Netflix for 5 months. Although honestly, even if you did, I wouldn't judge you. I'd be like, great, if that's what you need, Jamie, do it. So it sounds like you're not feeling any intense pressure to produce during sabbatical, which makes it really exciting because then there are so many possibilities, like so many different ways you could spend your days and your weeks. And it's just a matter of thinking about, you know, what do you want to prioritize during that time? And then like you said, figuring out how do you keep your lab running, but not get sucked into being on campus every day or meeting with students every day, which I would imagine might be something you don't want.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So another question I have then, it's helpful to know kind of work-wise what you're thinking about sabbatical. So if you think about your days and your weeks right now, and now if you picture yourself on sabbatical, how does that feel being on sabbatical, and what's different about your daily rhythms or weekly rhythms than what you have right now?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I feel like I probably don't want to be on campus during my sabbatical, so that would be different. I usually go in now 3 or 4 days a week during the semesters and 1 to 3 during the summers, but I feel like it would feel nice to not be on campus at all. So I think that part will be different. I think I already do flexible hours in terms of picking up my kids from school and spending some time with them. So I'd like to continue doing that during sabbatical, maybe try and make some time for things like workout classes that I have trouble finding time for during normal semesters. And yeah, stuff like that. I enjoy like going to coffee shops to work and that type of thing. So probably doing some of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I think that's what, I mean, so many people that I work with have goals to, for some sort of self-care. The reality of it is, especially, I think, for anyone who's got caregiving responsibilities as they're in the grind of going up for tenure, the first thing that falls away are the things that we really need to feel good and that really contribute to making our work and careers sustainable. And so sabbatical is such a great opportunity to get back into that routine and hopefully build habits that will persist post sabbatical. So it's not like, oh, I was in really great shape over sabbatical, and then, you know, I went back to never having any time for myself, or, you know, I finished my sabbatical and I never read another fiction novel again. So sometimes when I think about sabbatical, I think about seasons that are similar to sabbatical that I already know something about myself from. And I think for many academics, that's summer because it's when our routines tend to change. So if you think about sabbatical-like seasons that you've had, are there things you already know that you're like, oh, I'm really good at this, or I really like doing this during the summer, or this routinely doesn't work for me during the summer or during a sabbatical-like season?
Yeah, I think I do generally do a nice job of prioritizing my kids and making time for them during the summer, but maybe not as good a job at making time for those self-care type things. Yeah, and I feel like I always in the summers eventually get done what I need to do, but when I am, for example, prepping a new class, I always have the best intentions of spreading it out over the whole summer and making it not stressful, and I tend to end up doing it in the last few weeks of August, which I think is very common. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I have done a decent job of balancing work and life and making time for both, especially during the summers when it is a lot more flexible. I'd say the one thing I get sucked the most into is, you know, student committees and student projects and those types of things that keep going all year. And I really enjoy mentoring. It's one of my favorite parts of my job, but I wish sometimes like I could adjust when the timing of things and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a lot easier. Like when I left for my sabbatical, I just closed my office door. I mean, I communicated with my advisees, but I'm not running a lab. And so I was able to arrange things in a way that I was still working on research projects, but I was not supervising students who were working on research projects. So I think this kind of how you keep your lab running and how you navigate student needs while you're on sabbatical. So how many students are part of your lab, and do you anticipate being part of your lab while you're on sabbatical?
Yeah, I have a pretty big lab, but I'm also fortunate that I co-lead our lab with another faculty member here. So she has graciously offered to kind of lead the lab while I am gone, but my direct mentees, you know, I'll still be mentoring their research while I'm gone. So I have four doctoral students who I'll be working with during my sabbatical semester. And then our lab also has a handful of master students and a dozen or so undergrads at any given point.
Okay. So that's great that your colleague is willing to oversee the day-to-day stuff with the lab. And then in terms of the other kinds of committees and things you get pulled into, do you envision being able to release some of that during sabbatical, or do you feel like you'll still have to maintain the same number of committees?
Yeah. So like student milestones, I've tried to start being strategic and like letting students know already now that I'll be gone that semester. So they need to plan. If they want me on their committee, they need to try and plan around that. But I sort of feel like best intentions, like I sort of feel like some things will certainly come up during that period. I know, for example, that I've agreed to be on a master's thesis who intends to graduate at the end of winter semester of next year. So at some point during that semester, I'll sit on her thesis defense. And I've told my mentees about my sabbatical. I told them last summer when I was working on the Fulbright application. So they know that I'll be gone. And I'm trying to direct them towards like getting as much as they can done in fall semester, and that sort of thing. But I guess we'll see how it all plays out.
I think it's great that you're being proactive with just letting them know that this is on the horizon. And then what I would say in the fall, as it gets closer, probably like November, you'll want to think really clearly about like, okay, for this student who's at this stage, right? Because a student who's writing their dissertation is going to have different needs than a student who is in their second year and they're taking classes. So you can think about if you can bring other faculty in to support them and just things like, you know, how many times will you meet with them during your sabbatical or, and if at all, right? I think there are ways, especially with students who are earlier on, you could really limit the number of interactions you have. And if you are meeting with them somewhat regularly, you can put systems in place so that it's a lower lift for you, right? You kind of like, let's transfer some of this, like send me an agenda, send me something to read, because you're going to be off on sabbatical land, which is going to be lovely. And you're not thinking about these students all the time. And so what you want to set up is a way that when you do interact with them, they're helping bring you up to speed. Yeah. And I think with other committees that come up, like this master's student thesis, there are also ways to think about the way that you engage with those committees and saying, you know, like, oh, I'm happy to sit at your thesis defense and maybe review your thesis one time before that, right? So you can think about the way that you usually support students and then think, are there ways I could like scale down during sabbatical? It's great to support students, but we don't want your whole sabbatical to be sitting in committee meetings, you know, as lovely as the students are. Yeah. You give them a lot of your time during a regular semester.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit of time left, and I think there are a couple things that are coming up, and I'm wondering if you want to dig in a certain direction. So one is the idea of how do you keep yourself from getting sucked into departmental stuff, university stuff, when you're just 20 minutes away from campus and you're here on sabbatical. The other is thinking about how do you move projects forward without committing all of your time to work. And then the other thing we could think about is a lot of my clients, and this was true for me, particularly when you're going to not be changing your location during sabbatical, want to think about how do I make this time feel different? So like, I know I was on sabbatical, like I didn't just sit in my basement for a semester and do what I normally do, except I didn't have to teach and sit on committees. So do any of those resonate as a thing you would want to talk about?
Yeah, the last one maybe sounds most appealing because I think that is what I'm hoping for my sabbatical.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about, it sounds like you feel really good about the way that you make time for your kids and you show up for your family. Maybe a little less so about the way you make time for yourself. So what are some things that you enjoy doing that you don't normally have time for during a semester?
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to a mom friend of mine and we were talking about like hobbies, what hobbies? Like Although I recently had a birthday gift of a blowing glass workshop that I found so fun. And it was actually all the way in Wyandotte, Michigan, if you know where that is. So it was a bit of a hike to get there. If it was closer, I'd love to do more of that. So I was thinking about if there's a sort of similar vibe I could get from something closer by.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think taking a class of some sort, leaning into a hobby, I think particularly if it's a class and you have to go somewhere, there's something about, and not to wind up, but there's an accountability. Like I took a pottery class and I honestly signed up. I was a little scared because I'm like, I don't think I'm any good at pottery, but I knew we were in France for the first semester of my sabbatical. And then we came back to Michigan around Christmas time. And I was like, I know that I'm not going to leave the house in January when it's cold and cloudy. I need some motivation. And so that's what the pottery class was for me. But it was also and I think glass blowing or similar activity, like I imagine you really need to fully focus on it. And so you can't be like checking your phone or thinking about emails. I think there's something to being fully engaged in an activity that can make it really signal, you know, you don't have to worry about a meeting that's coming up or like rushing back for something. So I think looking into like a class or something that would give you a creative outlet, anything else that you, and I, you know, I don't want to put pressure on you to think of hobbies because I know I don't.
I used to do Zumba pretty regularly. And there was a class in Ann Arbor that I loved and was going to religiously. And then during the pandemic, we went remote for a while and did Zumba, but the instructor is no longer teaching. And then I haven't found a different Zumba class or another sort of physical outlet that has really stuck. So that's maybe something else that I'd like to try and look into.
Yeah. So maybe figuring out what, you know, if you can't do the Zumba class, what's that thing going to be? And I think sometimes there's a tendency, or at least I'll speak for myself because I'm very type A and controlling. I want to figure everything out ahead of time. But another great thing about sabbatical is you could say like, okay, I'm going to try this class for a couple times and see if it's good. And then maybe this one. And so the sabbatical can be a time of like, where you have a little bit more spaciousness in your schedule, where you figure out like, what do I like to do to stay active? And then, you know, maybe you're just figuring that out during sabbatical and then you have the routine afterwards where you kind of get into it. So the other thing that often people will do during their sabbatical that I think helps make it feel very different is they just have a different rhythm and routine for their work days. So I know we have a lot of time flexibility, which is, I think, both a blessing and a curse as academics. But sabbatical really gives you an opportunity to say things like, I only want to work 3 days a week, or I'm going to take the mornings for myself and work in the afternoons, or I'll get up and write and then I'll take the afternoon off. Or another one that came up in a conversation I had yesterday was an idea of doing someone who likes to work in sprints. So maybe like, work for 2 weeks and then take 2 weeks off. So there are lots of different ways to envision what your time could look like. Do any of those, as you think about that, resonate with you or feel like I would love to try that?
Yeah, all of them. I think, you know, having a day or two during the week that I don't do any work at all sounds like so refreshing. Like every, at the end of each semester, I try and like block one single day and I'll like go get a manicure and maybe even take myself to a movie or something like that. So like, and I look forward to that day at the end of the semester. So the idea of having, you know, a day like that every week does sound very appealing.
Yeah, that's great. And there could be, you know, I actually had a client who came up with like different themes for different days. And, you know, many moms I find want some time for life admin, even like blocking off an afternoon, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I don't know if I would advocate giving too much of your sabbatical time to life admin, but just the things that help us feel centered and whole, whatever that is. It's nice to, as you look ahead to your schedule, be able to say, okay, I'm actually making time for myself. And whether that's structured and you're saying, okay, Wednesdays I'm taking off, I'm going to my workout class, I'm doing my glass blowing, or you're just like, Wednesdays I'm taking off and I'm going to wake up in the morning and decide what I want to do. I think that it's a real gift and it really signals, I mean, you're the psychologist, so you probably could tell me something about this, but like how we tell our brains and our bodies that something's different, or I'm sure there's something neurological that's happening where we're saying, like, this is a different time. You're not just running from one meeting to the next during this semester.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's like such a treat to be able to have an hour to get things done and off the to-do list. I agree that shouldn't be the whole sabbatical, but I do think it's so nice to not have to try and squeeze that in after bedtime. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, sabbatical can be a great time to, if you're not squeezing that in after bedtime, then you and your husband can enjoy time together, right? And so this is, I had a client the other day who was like, oh, I didn't think I'd be talking about my family, like my personal stuff so much and like planning my sabbatical, but it really does. Right now, your life is probably really well calibrated because you're managing a bunch of different people's schedules with two working parents and kids who have their own activities and things going on. And so to be able to like step back from that and be like, oh, tonight after dinner, if we just want to go for a walk or go to the park, we can do that. It kind of, I think everyone in the family ecosystem benefits from that too.
Yeah.
Well, Jamie, it was really great to hear more about your sabbatical. And I hope that we've talked about some things that give you just some little nuggets of insight or ideas as you think about planning your upcoming sabbatical.
Yeah, thanks. This was helpful to start thinking about some of these things for sure.
Well, I hope you have an amazing sabbatical. And thanks again for doing this live coaching session with me.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.